Session number 220081, Wheel 7.
Mr. Gray, Reel 7. Right, Mr. Gray, you've just brought to mind the name of the other officer.
Yeah, Captain Logan, I was. He was with us for a while. He was young, well, young lad, same age, really. He was a nice chap to have.
And he was with you in North Africa?
Yeah, so one of them must have been wounded or something, you know, and he was there. It was him and Mr. Captain Perryman, you know, and then he was.
Now, we've talked about the Sejanine battle and we've talked about casualties and so on, but can you remember people that were wounded and missing and so on, those men gradually coming back to the battalion during this phase? Does any memory spring to mind?
See, this was a funny thing with us. When you come back, you just look round and so and so was missing, you know. You know, whether he's missing or being killed or what, you know. And this happened every time you went in a battle. And every time when you come out, oh, he's gone, he's missing, you know. Because we didn't really know what had happened to them at the time, you know. And it was a funny thing. And that used to play on your mind a bit because, oh, well, you've got to be next or something. So, yeah, that's just one of them things.
Did that affect how you treated and got on with the new replacements? I mean, other veterans have talked about how they were reluctant to become too friendly with people because they might not be with them for very long. Did that affect?
No, it used to, by the time it was getting near the end of the war, it used to prey on you a bit then. You know, every time they went into action, you know, you thought, well, when you see different people disappearing and, you know, and getting less and less. But then you've seen made friends with a new, well, we're getting replacements and what have you, you know.
Now, as the Tunisian campaign, you know, drew to an end, apparently, the battalion was moved around quite a lot.
Yeah, we went to a place called Hammond Lift near the sea because we were able to go swimming there, and that was where the signal was lost. These about four fellas killed with moving ammunition, like, you know.
Could you describe what the circumstances of that were? And
well, a lot of it was the other side's ammunition, not a thing we were moving, really, you know. But the RSM controlled most of that sort of thing, you know. And there was four of the signal lads there, and they were killed there, you know. That was why we was at Hammond Lift.
What did you think about being put onto that kind of work, of salvaging ammunition?
Well, they were so careful, like, you know, but you never knew something. Because a lot of it was in boxes, but as you know, lying about strewn anywhere, sort of thing, you know. Then, you see, sometimes the wogs would get round them, you know, the Arabs looking on. But it was a tricky job, but it was done all the while, you know. That was just that one instance in Hammond Lift where we lost four lads here. Yeah, that was a bit of a blow for the signals actually then.
Can you remember who those men were?
I noticed one of the photos there, Paler his name was. I can't remember that, but was, you know, Arthur Paler, he was one of them. It's funny, some names come to you and some don't.
Now, apparently there was a big victory parade at Tunis and the battalion was involved in that. Did you have any memories of that?
No, we were riding about there. We were there, like, you know, because I was there all the time. But I've never seen, I didn't know there were so many people involved in the North African campaign until I see that. You know, it was unbelievable where they all come from.
Now, did you, at this stage, can you remember your first encounter with German prisoners of war? You know, playing a close-up encounter.
We didn't take a lot of notice of that, you know. We just said, well, there's another load of Brits, and that was it, like, you know.
So you can't remember the first incident, you know, within the battalion where you saw these men up close that had been taken prisoner?
I think, we had some at Sejanine, didn't we? The first lot we had, didn't we? We didn't take a lot of notice of them, really. But we just happened to look at them, I suppose. You were just surprised. They looked just exactly the same as us, really, didn't we?
Now, apparently, according to the battalion history, Winston Churchill visited Hammondliff. Do you have any memories of that?
Yeah, him and I'm sure Eden was with him as well. Because they were in, board one of them warships out in the Med for quite a long while, you know, while we was up. Because when the Tunis Parade finished, we come back to move out of Bizerta. And we'd done a bit of training there, and that's where we got on the boat. We didn't know what Salerno was, but we knew we was going somewhere. And we took a lot of, there was a lot of playing activity then, because we used to watch some, we had some Spitfires come on the scene then, and there was a lot of dogfights there while we was on, getting on the boat, getting ready to go on the boat, you know. Because we was on the boat in Bizerta, I was thinking, about 2 days before we moved off.
Well, we'll get to Salerno, but you mentioned you did training. Can you remember what kind of training? What were they trying to teach you to do specifically with you know, being your job as a dispatch rider?
Well, they taught us about the because we went on the boat with the bike. Some of us did, and some didn't, because we had a bit of difficulty with the sand on a motorbike in North Africa, that sort of thing. Sort of thing. You know, if the wind blew the sand like a snowdrift, you know. And you very often get stuck in one of them. So some of the bikes went on transport, you know, and some, well, we rode them off, like, you know, I rode them on, sort of thing.
So you practiced riding the bikes under the...
Well, we had a fair lot of schemes and that sort of thing before we got on the boat at Bizerta, like, you know. There was a lot of training going on, more with the troops than what there was the us sort of thing, you know, really.
You were saying you did various schemes at Bizerta.
Yeah,
could you just describe...
Lots of exercises there, like, really.
Could you just describe what those would involve?
Well, see, we was with the signals sort of thing, you know, the chaps with the wireless sets were getting, we were practicing all the while, you know, the two lads with the M18 sets. And it's more or less communication, really. You know, it's a bit old. It's a job to remember it all, really.
Now, did you have any new equipment coming in? You mentioned the matchless bikes that you got.
Yeah, well.
Anything else?
We had. Well, we all got rigged out with different gear. I mean, every time we went somewhere else, we always got the storm, and we all the, well, the company quartermaster sergeant used to come and, you know, measure us up for clothes and boots and that sort of thing. You know, because I had them riding boots, you know. And if it was cold, you get all the coat or something, or a waterproof coat or something. So.
Now, during these training exercises, when you were driving the bikes on and off the boat, was that easy to do, or was it difficult?
Well, it was easy to bike, you know, more or less anything with a bike, really.
Now, and obviously, at this stage, you didn't know that you would be going to Salerno.
No.
But was there any kind of...
The rumour was we was going to Sicily on the boat, like, you know. But then when we got on board about a couple of days, we got on the radio about the Italians capitulating, you know, but before we got to Salerno, you know. And I think we transferred onto them LSDs before we got to Salerno, like, you know.
What was an LST? Describe that.
Well, if you see the pictures on the boat, so, you know, we were driving off them. Landing craft, transport or something, you know. But the Americans were on them boats because we added a meal, a couple of meals on the LST, and it was American food. The food was better than what ours was, sort of thing, you know. You were lucky to have one of them Yanks, sort of thing, you know.
What ways was it better?
Well, I think that's when we first come across that spam thing, you know, just that sort of gear, you know. And on the boat they had bread as well, you know, because we never had a lot of bread at all, you know. It was all hard tack. But there was a difference with the food quality of the food.
About how many men do you think were on your boat?
Oh, no, the boat we got in Bizet was more or less like a troop ship, really, you know. Because I think all the brigade was on that. But we transferred these LSTs somewhere along the line.
And about how many were on the LST?
Oh, 100, something like that.
And would they all be? Would they all be HQ company?
Oh, no, well, yeah, we'd be. They're all in. Yeah, the companies would have a boat to themselves, like, you know, more or less.
And now, you didn't know where you were going. You'd heard about the Italian surrender.
We heard that after because we thought it was, well, it was rumoured we'd go, like, I think it was Sicily, you know.
What was people's reaction to that? The news of the surrender?
When the surrender, I mean, people were all told this is, you know, made it a lot easier for us, sort of thing, you know.
Did you believe that?
Well, we did believe it, yeah. But that was a different kettle of fish when the jails and that were just waiting for us, really. And I was amazed that some of them. The photos on that, you've got the aerodrome LSTs, and there seemed to be nothing happening at all. To me, nothing like that at all. But I think there was 2 days there, I was one of the first to land, like that. And there was like 2 days of the landing job, you know. And that was what it looked like. But then we got off the boat, and then we was...
Could you just describe that process, you know, the boat you approached Salerno?
Well, they just dropped the front used to drop off these LSTs, and then you dropped the sand. And some of them went and got up, right up, and you wouldn't have to go in the water, they'd be right up when they opened the door, like, you know. And that went pretty reasonably, really, you know. There was a lot of, shells and what have you dropping about, you know. But when we got landed and we got organised, we got off the beach. Before we come into Salerno. But when we're getting into Salerno, that was the next day, we took some hiding. Took some hiding in there. And then we was up. When we got up going up a hill in Salerno, you know, we got in some old buildings at the bottom. And we was there to get sorted out and find out what's happening and all this business. And I was running back and forward to the boats, to give them instructions where they'd got to go. Like, I remember doing that ever so many times, you know, for the people who were landing after us, like, you know.
And that was on the bike?
Yeah. And I'd done that several times. And then we was in, the battalion issue was in a building then, you know, one of the big buildings in the outside of the town. And we moved and when we got organised, the company started and started moving. But we was up there about 9-10 days, you know. And now, I think it was HMS Hansen and HMS Howe stood out in the med and Churchill and he were on them out there. I know after about 3 or 4 days, they were thinking about taking us off, about 8 or 9 days. And we had we was in slip trenches up the hill for the first 2 days. And one of the naval OPs was with us in a slit trench as well, and he was directing the guns from the boats to the top of the hill, like, you know. And he was with us, I think, about 24 hours in that OP was, a naval chap, even in a slit trench, but he was in contact with the boats, like, you know. I think it was about 10 days we was up and down that plain hill before we got really settled. And then we started moving a bit, then, you know.
Just to stay in this period, when you first landed, so you did you ride the bike off?
Oh yeah,
straight off the landing craft.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, could you just describe one of these journeys that you would make? You know, back to the boat from the forward positions. You know, about how far apart were these? How long would it take? And what were the your impressions?
Perhaps about 3/4 mile, a mile from the boat. You know. Because I remember the first day we got there, or 2 days, we was in this building, down HQ, and I say I used to run back and forth because, like, transport, like they called it BS, you know, was back, and if they used to go back to their messages and all this business. Well, when I wasn't on the bike, when we was in this building, the bike was outside. Well, I got going back one of the times, I was going back to the beach, and my mudguard come down on the slid down, and the front wheel run over it, and I got my Tommy gun in the back of me, and I faced up between the telegraph pole and the wall, and the Tommy gun stopped me going through it, you know. And what really happened there was, while the bike was outside, where there was a lot of rubbish flying about, there's a nut at the top of the forks that hold the top of the mudguard, you know, and that had been knocked about with a bit of shell or something, you know. And that's why that slid forward, and I ran out of it. Yeah, I remember that well.
Now, obviously, during these first few days, there was only like a bridgehead to learn over.
More or less, yeah.
So, were you under direct fire when you were on the?
Oh yeah, all the time, like, you know. Now there we had a lot of the mortars there. The multiple mortars used to scream, and you know, you can hear them coming over the top, you know. They were quite a lot. Well, they used the Jerry's used them a lot there. Yeah. But that's what caused a lot of problems.
What was the situation as you saw it on the beach? Did it look like an organised? Did things look? I mean, did you feel optimistic about the progress of this?
Oh yeah, well, you know, I suppose everybody was a bit cautious and a bit frightened, I suppose, because you didn't really know what was going to happen. Because I say we thought they'd capitulate, you know, but we got the wrong impression because I mean Jerry was there, you know. When I say I was after 2 or 3 days, because you know, got worse sort of thing, you know. For them, because the Yanks, they landed at Anzio, they were further up, didn't they? You know. Yeah, that was a winner. Salerno.
Now, you mentioned the fact that there was an idea that maybe the invasion would, you know, that it'd be reversed, that people would withdraw. Was that a rumour that went round at the time, or was that, you know?
Well, that was a rumour then, you know, we might be getting ready to take some of us off. Because we were stuck there, really stuck there, for about 10 days, I think it was. Before they got, you know, then the companies got sorted out at the top, but we had that naval AOP here, and they were, when the shells had come off and the boats. Yeah.
What were conditions like during those 10 days?
Well, actually, we just lived in a slit. Then we lived in a slit chance, you know, really. I left my bike was down the bottom, and I stuck it because it was a bit sharp, you know. And well, I had it down in one of the buildings, leaning against the wall, sort of, the, you know. And then I used to pull up and get where the itchy was, and once we got slit chance, we lived in them, really.
So could you describe, you know, how big a slit trench was and how many men there would be?
Where we was, there was only like more or less two of us in it. We lived in it, slept in it, sort of thing, you know, and you had your food in it, you know. You got out of them when things were a bit quiet, but you spent a lot of time in the slit trench.
Can you remember who you were with at this stage?
Yeah, Frankie Reynolds, most of the time. And he was a signal corporal there. He got stripes on him, but he was near us. Well, he was a great mate, actually, you know.
So he'd be your immediate superior?
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
Now, in terms of food during this 10 days, was there any hot food, or what would the food be?
Oh, no, we had the compo boxes, you know, we had them. They used to bring us up. They used to last about 7 days, and, I mean, the signals, your slit trains would be next door to somebody else's, so I think that's seriously. Share a box and you know, you heat it, you eat it cold or anything, you know, and you're hungry, don't you? And play hard biscuits.
What do you think of these combo rations?
It's only when they could feed you, really. I mean, it was a really good idea, actually. Because you're always getting a bit of food, don't you? I used to feel sorry for the chaps that was a little bit older and got false teeth. They couldn't chew the biscuits at all, like, you know. And they used to try and mix them up.
But there's no American rations at this stage.
Oh, no.
Now, you mentioned you're under enemy shell fire and mortar fire. What about enemy aircraft? Were you troubled by them at this stage?
Not really, not at this stage, no. That was after. The aircraft were going along the beach sort of thing, you know, but so we was up the hill, you know, like an orange grove or a grape grove sort of thing, a tree sort of thing.
Now, apparently, the rifle companies at this stage, according to the battalion history, they were engaged in the Hospital Hill area. And apparently there was a major counterattack by the Germans.
Yeah, they were all from then, yeah.
Can you remember your memories of that, specifically what you were doing at this time and what you could remember about what was going on?
Well, I'll say we didn't do a lot of motorbike riding at all there, because I'll say it was up the hill, like, you know, and it was all muddy and that sort of thing. And we were just in the slit trench, you know, trying to keep out of the way sort of thing, and all the companies are, you know.
Did the rumours of what was going on come back to you?
Oh, yeah. There was always a runner for more or less every company at Battalion HQ. And if anything went wrong with your wireless or with the line under the cable, you know, there was always a runner to rely on it, you know. But they got a funny job, because they only went to the last place they'd had where they were, like, you know, and obviously they'd have moved, you know, from the time they'd been the last time, sort of thing, and they got a very difficult job, really.
So, did you ever have experiences of the runners just disappearing?
I said there was one or two, you know, it was a funny job actually. I said they just had a rough idea of where they were, but I mean, when they got there, perhaps they would have gone forward, else come back, you know.
And they'd have to work that out for themselves.
That's right, yeah. Oh, they'd got quite a difficult job.
Were you under sniper fire at this stage?
Oh, yeah, all the time, weren't I? Yeah. Oh, yeah. One or two holes in the motorbike with them, in the back wing. Didn't know you had them until you come back. Oh, where'd that come from? Yeah.
So what was your reaction when you'd see this?
Well, that must have been a near goal. You didn't know. You shook your shoulder and carried on. There's a lot worse happening.
Now, obviously, this is a very hilly area, and there were areas where the bike couldn't be used. What would be your duties then?
Just helping out in battalion headquarters, like, you know, if you was told to go anywhere you went, that sort of thing, and that was it. You know. But you was always on hand for something, rather, you know. Oh yeah.
Now, you mentioned earlier, I think, in the interview, just in passing, the fact that sometimes you would have an officer in the back of the bike, and I think you've also mentioned that sometimes they would get the radio on the back of the bike and move around. Was this happening at this stage, or did this come?
When we start moving towards Naples, that happened a bit more, because we was moving on the road sort of thing then, you know.
So you could move a couple of...
Yeah.
Further.
Now...
You're under heavy shell fire during this phase. How did people cope with that, with this sustained? I mean, how had you learned, you know, from your North African experiences, or did?
Oh, we'd gained a lot from North Africa. I mean, we'd always go head in a slit trench when we had anything coming, so that was, you know, that was the first thing we ever done. Well, we've done a lot of that, really. You know, you'd always dig yourself a hole.
So you weren't convinced of that until you'd actually been in action?
Oh, no.
So you moved inland.
Yeah.
What happened then? And they're just still in this early phase of the Salerno.
Well, when we started moving, it wasn't long when we got to Naples, actually. Because I'll bet I was one of the first ones to go in Naples. That major, Cardinal War, but he was a major then, and he was a good fella. He'd never have a tin hat on, you know. He'd walk about, and he jumped on the back of the bike, and we went into Naples, and when we got into Naples, it was just clouds of smoke and fire and that, you know. And he jumped on the bike and go look round the corner, and he'd weigh things up, and the bike, and he was a fearless sort of fella at the war. Very nice bloke.
So, Naples, your first impression, fire, smoke.
Well, for them, I mean, Jerry was just getting pulled out, like, you know. And there was some tanks there, you know. There was a tank regiment in there. And they were in front. And Warrow was on the bike with me. But he used to jump off and look round the corners and look everywhere and weigh things up. Never had a pretty tin on at all.
What did you think about that?
Well, you hear the brace of it. You know, just, you know, very casual, but he's got his head screwed on properly.
So he would use the bike as a way of, was a reconnaissance vehicle?
That's right, yeah. But then they usually have a jeep, like, if it was, you know, that way.
Did you ever have any close calls carrying him or any of the other officers?
Not really. It got a bit dodgy when you knew he was, like, going through where a lot of mines were, because you knew, well, they would tell us where the mines and that were, and that was a bit tricky then, like, you know.
You mentioned earlier that, I think you said just in passing, that there was sometimes a mine would, a jeep would explode a mine,
but a bike wouldn't. Well, you know, in the early, I went with a bike. I remember that there was a colour sergeant Day. He was a quartermaster. He used to do with the grub and that. He was HQ. And they were in jeep. He got killed with the jeep. And I went on down this track after him, because there was stonk in a crossroads at the bottom. And they used to do that all the time, every 2 minutes. And we got a company further over, and that's why they used to go down with the jeep. But he got blew up and got killed here. And Frank Reynolds, he was a corporal, he used to listen to me, and I would sit on the bike, and when one dropped on the crossroads, it was continuous, every perhaps 3 minutes, you know. And Frank said, right, Alec, you can go now, and that's how he used to go, like, you know. Too. And when he'd get down there, he was going through small, but I knew where I was going, like, you know. But they were timed, you know. Yeah.
So you would time the shell
there were shell fire in this crossroads all the time at certain intervals, you know. And they would wait till Frank Reynolds would wait and see the smoke in the distance, you know. And he said, right, and you know, that's how we used to go. But you never took a lot of notice, I just got just part, you know, that was your part of your job, and that was it, really. Although everybody was frightened, but you just done it yourself.
And I suppose there was no kind of precautions you could take against mines.
Oh,
you
no,
couldn't
no, not at
look,
all. No. The RE's done a good job, you know, but they couldn't do everything, you know. When we come across that quite a fair bit, you didn't really know until one went off and said, well, that's, you know.
Now, other veterans have talked about, you know, the importance of, like, raising dust in the front line, and the fact that, you know, a motorbike, a jeep, a tank, a truck would raise dust.
Oh, you couldn't see behind them, you know.
Did you ever have any?
Well, it was always in our faces, because I used to wear a bit of rag around your mouth and your nose, you know, and you were a different colour, your face. It was just, well, like a load of cement or sand on you. You couldn't odds that, because any vehicle went in front, I mean, it just clouded, just like a load of fog, you know.
But did you ever have a situation where, you know, a unit would resent the fact that you turned up because you'd brought a cloud of dust with you? You know, you, like, reveal the position.
Well, see, no, they've got to have you, I mean, you've got to have transport to take your food there, and, you know, the jeeps and that, you know, unless it was up the mountains, of course, you had the old Indians on the donkeys bring your food up. But, no, you can odds it for dust, like, you know.
Because apparently there was always signs towards frontline areas don't create any dust.
You couldn't do much about it. Really.
So you couldn't not create dust?
No, you couldn't not do it at all. No. But obviously, a bigger vehicle, I mean, cloud, and if you're up there following, you couldn't see nothing.
Did you ever have to drive the jeep, or were you always exclusively on the bike?
No, I was on the bike all the time. No, these company commanders have got their own driver sort of thing all the time, you know, real enough. But
you didn't envy? You didn't have a hankering to maybe to move across?
No, I was quite happy on the old bike, because, you know.